Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 459.
This week on the podcast, you guys, where on earth is Mitch McConnell? And is he still actually on earth?
And Donald Trump will have to be brought down by the very people who brought him to us, New Yorkers.
Plus, Chris Christie harkens back to the heady days of his undercard debate glory.
And Joe Manchin and Joe Lieberman. Why didn't we see the parallel sooner?
Plus, Ron DeSantis takes on the real government of Florida, Disney, and loses.
And the federal government picks an arbitrary end date to a pandemic that's still very much ongoing.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey, y'all, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
What an exciting week.
You guys, this is just the kind of week that we live for.
Yeah.
And just the kind of week that I expected to hear a lot of news from various lawmakers about their feelings about the week. And one lawmaker in particular was notably absent from that news. Where is Mitch McConnell, you guys?
I don't know. Do we have proof of life on him?
We don't. We know that he
supposedly had made calls to senators that he was excited to get back to work. Has he been back to work?
No.
He's been in
the Mishri rehab facility for an amount of days that is always expanding.
Yeah, he fell on March 8th. Remember,
right.
He fell at this thing and had a concussion or something like that. He was in the hospital for a full 5 days. The hospital,
right.
the rehab facility.
That's how long Chris Christie was in the hospital with COVID. It's an important point of comparison.
And then he was at this rehab facility for 12 additional days.
Rehab from a fall for 12 days.
I'm really wondering, did this take him out? He's 81.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to be, morbid, but I mean, you hear about old people falling who are, in sort of, relatively, reasonable health, and then, it deteriorates at that point. It's just sort of, the whole, it all just goes to shit after that.
Well, and does he have doesn't he have other weird health? He had that weird hand thing.
Oh my God, that's right. He had
the bruised hands. Yeah, exactly. So he had that. He doesn't look well.
No, well, no.
He looks like a turtle.
That goes back to the 60s when he was first elected.
Right. But I mean, he has said nothing about the Trump indictment, which is okay, maybe he doesn't want to comment because maybe it's a complicated situation for him.
Yeah.
But where has he been for the last month?
I know.
What's the Senate?
I know. There's
They're passing legislation. How?
I know. Right. He's not there. John Fetterman. Oh, Fetterman got released, I think.
Yes,
from the,
right.
Just recently. But he has not been there. Hasn't there somebody else who hasn't been there? I feel like
we're
operating on a very part-time basis in the United States Senate right now.
Which, to be fair, is always how it's operated because it's like an old age home for decrepit people.
Oh, God.
But I mean, I guess with enough people absent, you can just keep voting.
Yeah, just
and
right on trucking.
Right on trucking. But is there any sort of strategy or plan or agenda that's being put forth for the Republicans in
I don't
his
know.
Absence? Because he's kind of in charge of something.
In theory, I guess. Yeah.
In any case,
oh, man.
You probably heard that Donald Trump was indicted.
you probably did.
And you probably heard it from Donald Trump himself. He
right.
first teased it a few, maybe last
really
week or the week before.
This.
He is having...
Nobody's loved being indicated more than Donald Trump, right?
Yes. He posted on Truth Social that it was an abomination that he had been indicated.
That he'd been indicated, yeah.
But as I have been excited to report to everyone, I'm hoping that Trump is brought down by the very people that brought you Donald Trump. Because the case that we are talking about is the people of the state of New York against Donald J. Trump. And that's who I think really had to stop this problem. You know, it's like we started this problem, you know, as the people of New York State. I say that from my West Hollywood home. But but I mean, the people of New York State are who brought America Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's a monster we created in our image. He's a very New York figure.
Sure.
In a very specific kind of New Yorkiness that we all hate in New York. but it seems only fitting that we would be the only people with the power to start an indictment train. Because my feeling is...
hopefully start the floodgates.
Well, I think everyone was just hovering, waiting to see if anyone would have the guts to indict on any charges.
Yeah.
And once it turns out that you can indict Donald Trump, I feel like everyone's going to have... He's committed numerous crimes. There's numerous cases where he could be indicted just going through the courts right now. I mean, this case that we're talking about right now has nothing to do with like policy or elections or voting or any of the things that we actually care about. And I actually think that that's my favorite thing about it. I feel like this is the best possible case for us to get a first indictment because he can't rally his supporters over anything that has anything to do with them. All they can say is it's unfair. And look, walk around saying it's unfair. I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
But this is a case where people have already done jail time. People have already been indicted for this crime. So, like, we know it's a crime. It doesn't matter if you think it's a witch hunt. It's already been established a crime.
Right.
And it doesn't... He can't spin it as having done it for the people. It's not like the Georgia case where he can be like, we were fighting for your votes or
He's trying to do that.
Of course.
He's trying to make it like an election stealing, which is not
But we're
not
talking about a hush money payment to a porn star.
Yeah.
And that just doesn't have... Like, everyone knows the details of the case well. We've been familiar with it for years.
Yep.
So it just doesn't have the same panache.
Right.
He can't claim he was paying hush money to a porn star for us.
Right.
Hard as he may try.
That's right.
So I'm actually excited. I think this is a smart first indictment of all the cases that he could have possibly been indicated on. And there are many.
I mean, his diehards are obviously going to rally to him for whatever reason.
Right.
But it's harder to... say that it's sort of an election witch hunt that like they're trying to, you know, do whatever, like steal democracy from you or take away your freedoms or whatever it is that he might say, because this doesn't have anything to do with any of
it. It has nothing to do with anything. We already know people have gone to jail for this crime. So it's an established crime. It doesn't matter if you think that for some reason presidents should be allowed to pay hush money. We know that this was a crime that was committed.
Well, and that I think has been like the thing that has been so wild to me is that all of these people sort of just like are in all the these Republicans are like mostly collectively also up in arms, even the people who are running against him generally for president, just like about, you know, they're going after Bragg and they're going after the process and it's the witch hunt and it's all these. There's nothing that says that we don't charge former presidents with things. We have set a bit of a precedent, but just once by Gerald Ford deciding not to. You know, to not go after, you know, Nixon, or to pardon Nixon,
preemptively pardon him.
Right, exactly. And so now people are just sort of like, well, we don't do that. And it's like, well, we can.
We don't do it just because we didn't, because of the time that we didn't do it one time. Right.
And also, you know, there's a lot of Republicans who are suggesting that we should just, like, go back and start looking at whether other presidents did crimes. And I'm fine with that.
Like, they all did.
This is another good idea that we should let them have.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm fine. I don't know what we're charging them with yet, but if they have a good idea for an actual crime they committed, then I say, let's do it.
Well, and every time that they have this idea, it's like they want to prosecute people, like, you know, they have like the Clinton scandal. It's always a sex scandal with them, which is, I think this
fits. Which is what this is,
why I'm so surprised that they're so scandalized by it. Yeah. They love sex scandals.
Well, I know Lindsey Graham is out here like really trying to, get everybody to donate to Donald Trump on Fox News. And Lindsey Graham was the person who tried to get Bill Clinton impeached for getting a blowjob. So,
exactly.
You know, and I know that's not, you know, don't come after me for that.
No.
But know what I mean.
The president that followed... committed war crimes.
Well, right.
You know,
we're
talking about a world in which Republican presidents.
Yeah, presidents are criming.
Crimed.
if you want to charge them with something, then God bless. I don't care which one of them it is.
No, all of them. I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
Go after all of them. But yeah, this is, however, the first time in American history that a current or former president has faced criminal charges, full stop.
And a lot
that's
of them
it.
Just for this.
Yeah,
there's
30 charges.
There's 30-some charges. 34, I think, is like.
And this is just one case, you guys.
Yeah, this
there's multiple cases. There's multiple juries out there who could indict him at any point.
So good.
We don't know yet what those 30 charges are, but we have some ideas.
Yeah.
Basically, so they're trying. I think, you know, there had been a lot of discussion about what the Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg's office could charge Trump with. Obviously, it's for his role in the cover-up around the Stormy Daniels payment. And that's, I think, an important distinction because it's not actually illegal to make hush money payments. It is illegal, however, to lie about what you're doing with your money as a company and then put that in election filings and such.
Right.
So that's
the problem, too, because he used the campaign money, right?
He used campaign money.
Claiming that he did.
Yeah, and Cohen went to jail because he actually made the payment.
Right.
But this is a case about how they paid Cohen back for making the payment.
Mm,
basically they're looking at what Trump's team did in order to reimburse Michael Cohen for the payment that he went to jail for making. But they're weighing whether to charge him. We'll see what they actually came up with. But with whether to charge him over falsifying business records because of how the payment is reflected in the Trump Organization's business records. That's a misdemeanor in New York. But also there's a version of it that's a felony. Because if they decided to falsify those records with the intent to commit another crime or conceal a crime, then that's a felony. So there's a lot of directions we can go. We'll be excited to see which ones we came up with. There are 30 counts, though, so I'm excited to know what all...
We'll tell you about all 30 of them next week.
All 30 of them are, exactly. The president is apparently... we thought, you know, we were promised last week that he would be... arrested on Tuesday. He wasn't, but he's going to be arraigned and arrested and arraigned on Tuesday this week, according to the current news. That, of course, could change. But the good news is he's loving every moment of this so much that he will for sure keep us updated. So we will know exactly when
he's going to from Mar-a-Lago on Tuesday night.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right. Oh, yeah. He's doing a live address.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And he can't be going to New York if he's going to be at Mar-a-Lago on Tuesday night. So maybe he's decided not to show up. Interesting.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They asked him to surrender on Friday. He said no. Just like, I guess this is the kind
there's of thing. There's a lot of conversations to whether he's going to be cuffed or not.
I know. And also, there's been a lot of conversation on various news platforms among pundits about whether he's going to use his mugshot as a campaign image. It's all they want to talk about. It's so funny. Whether you're on Fox News, MSNBC, doesn't matter. Everyone is just talking about whether he's going to use his mugshot as a candidate. Crooked Media was talking about it. It's like all, immediately that's all anyone could think of, which is, I think, just how like Hollywood this whole thing actually is. It's just like a circus. Yeah. Everyone's just like, what are the visuals going to be?
I know. Like, I know.
My favorite thing about this is also the way that a lot of his advisors and supporters have expressed concern about the fact that this case will be happening in Manhattan, where everyone's a Democrat, and so how will they find a good jury? And there's one quote from one of his advisors that
Should probably do it like in Mississippi or something then. Right?
Right. No, that's find it's a great like from jury a CNN there, article, for, and it's yeah. like there's no way he gets a fair jury. What are they going to say? Have you ever heard of Donald Trump? Have you been living under a rock? Where are they planning to find a jury where no one's ever heard of Donald Trump?
No.
Like the Amazon? Like where could they possibly go to find a jury that doesn't meet this criteria?
Yeah.
What a weird way of framing that.
I know.
But yeah, it's the GOP talking points are nuts right now. Fox News keeps comparing the Democrats to Stalin, which I think is hilarious. I saw a supercut of all their Stalin references from the night that we found out about the indictment. Oh my God, and it was one amazing. Of the most glorious 5 minutes of television I've ever seen in my life. But I'm, you know, excited to see what other figures they can draw in as a comparison once they had enough Stalin references that they need to come up with someone new. Right. Like, where do they go? Is it a Mussolini type situation?
That'd be rich.
I mean, I feel like they could certainly go Hitler. They love they love to compare Democrats to Hitler. They love to compare anyone to Hitler. Yeah. But I'm excited to see where their historical references evolve to.
I know.
But here's one sad thing about this whole situation, because I saw something I think it was on Twitter, about how we were all you see this every time there's a big Trump, you know, big Trump news, which is just that we're all chasing the high of the night that he got COVID.
No.
Because that was like the greatest moment in Twitter history.
Right.
But like, because Twitter is such a mess right now, it was not fun to follow this story on Twitter, which is the best place to follow usually a story like this. And this was the first time I really like tangibly felt the loss of the Twitter that once was. Though Twitter still exists, it was like this all happened the week where everyone was losing their blue check marks. And there was, you know, some people are paying for Twitter Blue and they're writing like long essays on Twitter that you don't care about. And you know, the algorithm's all screwy right now. And so like it was just kind of like frustrating to not have the like hot take machine that I was used to, because that's really what made Trump getting COVID so exciting. Is it's like you could watch it on CNN and it was like a live breaking story and that was very exciting.
Yeah.
But also, Twitter was like doing its best work that it's ever done.
Yeah. Yeah, you do miss those moments where you really just sort of like appreciate the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. And this, I feel like maybe also we've become a little like inured to the Trump Big News Day effect.
Yeah, probably.
Because the man loves a Big News Day. Yeah. He's been hyping this up himself because he knows it's a Big News Day. But like I feel like now I'm like, oh, another big piece of Trump news. Like there's nothing new to say about it.
Yeah.
Which is too bad.
Well,
making we'll history, see. Donald Trump.
That's right. Yeah. There is one Republican who wants him to get out of the race.
Only
which is,
one.
Which is hilarious because the only way he polls over 1% is if Donald Trump gets out of the race, probably. Asa Hutchinson is running for president.
Former Arkansas governor. Surprise, surprise.
Hot take. Better or worse candidate than Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee?
Oh, I think you know my answer.
Good. I just wanted to say Mike Huckabee on this podcast again.
Yeah, I'm willing to talk about Mike Huckabee any day.
I know you are. Yeah.
No, this is actually a perfect example of how you can be an irrelevant Arkansas governor and not have the right kind of panache to make a meaningful contribution to the race. Because yeah. I feel like, look, is Mike Huckabee going to be the president? Certainly not. But yeah. He added a certain flavor to the race. He's like a cuddly teddy bear of hate.
Yeah.
And that's its own, and a populist cuddly teddy bear of hate. Mm-hmm. And like, that's its own thing. One thing that is clear if you read even one word of an Asa Hutchinson sort of like bio is that he's like the most supremely unfun person you've ever encountered in your life. So he's the only candidate who's willing to call on Trump to remove himself from the race. But that's because he is a literal person who's not fun. Yeah. It's not because he has morals, because he still thinks that the idea of the charges is a bad idea.
Right.
But he's a former DA.
We also have to respect our criminal justice system because it's doing such a bang up job.
He loves the criminal justice system. He's constantly, when he was in office, he was always supporting legislation to make it easier for the criminal justice system to be corrupt. Right. That's one of his things. But he's a former DA, but he's very anti-drug, and he used to run the DEA under Bush. Mm. He's also worked for the Department of Homeland Security when that was first formed. And he was the prosecutor, like the House manager, in the Clinton impeachment trial. That's who Asa Hutchinson is, the most unfun person on the planet.
Yeah.
This is a man who does not like a good time, does not like an entertaining time, which is, and that's why he hates Donald Trump.
And you can tell all of this about him if you just look at him
for 1 minute. Right. Yeah. But he's also like not, something about, I hate when politicians don't understand that politics is theater in a way that makes, like politics, it doesn't matter if you don't want it to be theater. Should it be serious? Of course. Yeah. It is, though.
Certainly a campaign has to be.
A campaign is entirely theater. There's nothing real about a campaign.
Yeah.
But politics itself is like 90% theater. Totally. And I hate when people get really on, like, get on a high horse about how more theatrical candidates are like not doing politics right. And it's like, no, you're not doing politics.
Right, I know.
Be more interesting than Donald Trump.
And all of these people want to swoop in and be like, I'm going to be the one that will win because I'll be the one that they'll take seriously.
Yeah. And it's like nobody wants to take someone seriously. And nobody, like, that thing that we always used to say in the Bush administration about how, like, people want to be able to have a beer with their president, to some extent, is, I think, really insightful. And I have said repeatedly on this podcast and out in the world that there are plenty of, like, Republican political dynasty families that I would happily have a beer with because I think they'd be fun. I bet the Bushes are fun at dinner. Not Barbara, but, like, everyone else was probably kind of fun. Like, and like, charming, you know?
Yeah.
The McCains, probably very fun at a dinner party.
Yeah.
The Trumps don't seem fun.
No.
Nobody wants to have I don't feel safe in the same room as Donald Trump, but I certainly don't want to have a beer with the man.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, so he's like a little too wackadoodle, you know, and then on the other side, there's people like Asa Hutchinson who I wouldn't want to have a beer with because they seem not fun.
Right, exactly. Ron DeSantis falls into this category.
Ron DeSantis, straight into that category.
Yeah.
But like, there's
actually
plenty,
really everybody. Nikki Haley.
Nikki Haley.
In
super
that category.
Unfun.
Mike Pence.
Mike Pence. wouldn't have a beer with you.
Yeah.
And wouldn't be in a room.
They don't have anybody that has announced yet that you want to have a beer with.
No, which is like, as much as that's annoying as a criteria, because like, who fucking cares if the president's fun? Like, being the president is a leadership role where you have to kind of like seem like someone who knows people.
Yeah. Well, and you would want to, I mean, I might be too far gone at this point, but I think like generally the broad public would enjoy having a beer with Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Or an ice cream cone.
I would enjoy having an ice cream cone with Joe Biden. I don't think I would enjoy it as much as I might enjoy having an ice cream cone with someone I like more.
Right, exactly.
But like, I don't, like, he is somebody who, like, I think people think, my issues with him are political.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't harbor any personal resentment towards him. But, like, somebody like Asa Hutchinson is the epitome of the kind of person that doesn't understand that you have to take the theater seriously.
Yeah.
That is what frustrates me. And I think the Democrats are very guilty of this. This is why I'm always so frustrated with them. I think, you know, they run the sort of Al Gores of the world, and they don't take the theater part seriously because they think it's beneath them to admit that all of it is just flash and, you know, nonsense.
Yeah.
And it's not. I mean, it is, but it's that's what politics is. Like, sorry about it.
Right.
This is just a big show we're putting on. We're wondering why we can't beat Donald Trump.
It's don't call it Hollywood for ugly people.
For nothing.
For nothing.
Exactly.
We've been calling it that for decades.
Decades.
I didn't invent that right now.
No. No, exactly. No. So Asa Hutchinson seems like the kind of person who aggressively misunderstands that point.
Yeah.
And that frustrates me.
Right.
And I think he shares that with a lot of moderate Democrats, which is why that point frustrates me so much.
I agree. Now, would you like to have a beer with Chris Christie?
I would have a beer with him any day.
I was going to say, of the people that we've listed, I feel like he's the closest that I would want to have a beer with.
And not because I would respect him at the end of the beer. Like, nothing like that.
But it might be entertaining.
He would be entertaining. And the reason that I know he would be entertaining is because one of the defining qualities of Chris Christie from his early days as governor was that Democrats and Republicans alike would both say, but have you met him?
Yeah.
And anytime you have a politician like that, you know that you're dealing with a sort of a smart political theater player.
Yeah.
So even though Chris Christie is a total buffoon who has no political courage and is a whiny asshole who, you know, causes traffic to get at his rivals and a bunch of other bullshit and can't sit on a chair correctly, I know that Chris Christie has some political skill that is incredibly valuable because he is the kind of person who Democrats would get a beer with and be like, have you met this guy? And I remember very distinctly, actually, we watched him walk with a press huddle at Politicon out of a panel that he was in.
Yes,
and down
I
the
remember.
Hall,
I had forgotten about that, too.
He was very charming.
Very charming.
Very charismatic. And I was like, oh, I finally see it. Like, I see why he gets away with all his bullshit. Because that, you, some of these people, you know, and actually, I would say he has the problem that Hillary Clinton has where he can't project that gravitas, but he has it in a room. Like, Hillary Clinton couldn't be more delightful in person. I say that all the time. Couldn't be a worse speaker in public. Sounds like, you know, sounds like she's lecturing you when she is delivering
or
a policy
speech. Something like,
or saying something
like, time to Pokemon go to the polls.
Right. Or saying, she's like out of touch in public somehow.
Yeah.
Or in big crowds. But in person, she couldn't be more charismatic. And I think Chris Christie probably falls into that category because he certainly doesn't project as charismatic.
He does not.
And he should know that about himself. That's why he's never been the president.
Right.
And it's why he's only been the president of New Jersey, because that's
the
place.
He's certainly going to be announcing soon enough, because he's living in New Hampshire.
He's,
and he's saying a lot of things.
He keeps trying to make 2024 happen.
And he is saying the most ridiculous things. And because, look, he's been sort of late, been on record saying multiple times to some, you know, iteration of, like, we have to be never Trump. We have to move on from Trump. We can't be voting for Trump again. I'll never vote for Trump again. We have to do blah, blah, blah. And so just recently, he said, was very firm about this. And he said that we needed somebody in the race to do to Donald Trump what I did to Marco Rubio back in 2015.
We need a sixth place finisher to knock a seventh place finisher straight out of this race.
I mean, look, it's true. He did end Marco Rubio in a similar fashion to, like, Elizabeth Warren ending, you know, Mike Bloomberg. I mean, like, really just went after him. It was that debate that I think where he was just, like, kept saying the same thing over again. And I think he accused him of being a robot or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly what it was. But it was good.
No, it was good. It was good TV.
But, I mean, it was. It was sort of like, it was like almost the undercard debate, you know, right? I mean, it was just sort of like,
it was the
I took out
on
Carly Fiorina. It's like, well, nobody cares whether you did that or not.
Yeah, and so, that's also not, according to him, this is going to be the only thing that's going to defeat Trump. That's not the only thing that's going to defeat Trump.
And the
having the skills to knock Marco Rubio out of the race.
And the most hilarious part about all of this is that Chris Christie ran straight to Trump as soon as he dropped
directly
out, and was the first person in that race, and really sort of like the first, like, actual person with any sort of gravitas to endorse in a probably really actually helpful way to Donald Trump in that race.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, in part, we experienced a Donald Trump presidency because of help from Chris Christie.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe that's just on his conscience, but, like, you don't get to now claim that you're going to Marco Rubio him.
I remember when he made that endorsement, it was really shocking.
It was, yes.
And
people were surprised.
People were really surprised, and it was, like, the first domino falling in the sort of end of the GOP was a decision that Chris Christie made to be a fucking coward.
Yeah.
A whiny asshole coward that he is. And even though he had been staking out a position like he was going to be a Never Trumper for that whole race, he immediately folded the moment he dropped out of the race, within seconds.
Yeah, I'm sure he had been called a bunch of awful names by Trump all the way up until then.
He had been. And also, he, I'm sure, was promised something that was never delivered on.
Oh, for sure.
He did it in a way that made clear that he had been promised something, because you don't do that shit for nothing. It's like how Pete Buttigieg dropped out and endorsed Joe Biden because he was going to get a secretary position out of it.
Yeah.
He was going to be in the cabinet. Like, it's so clear, because then they turned on Chris Christie halfway through the race. Do you remember how, like, he went and endorsed Trump, and then Trump, the Trump team turned on him at a certain point. So it didn't even work out for him.
No, it didn't.
So it's probably why he's so mad about it. But also, don't be a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
If there is not, there was not one person in that race who would have the tools to know Donald Trump better than Chris Christie.
Yeah.
He was part of the same political community, the same rich person, important person, New York, New Jersey, tri-state area community. He knew Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's of the same cloth as Donald Trump. Right. They're the same kind of person.
Yeah.
Like, the idea that he got played by Donald Trump is,
It's embarrassing.
It's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
For everyone involved. And mostly him. My favorite thing, though, the biggest LOL in this entire story, which is a hilarious story in Politico, that was then Esquire then like basically like trashed it in their own magazine. But he also kept saying that he was going to be the candidate who injected optimism and civility back into politics.
Is that what he's known for?
No.
No, it's not.
So crazy. What a crazy thing to have come out of his mouth.
Wild.
What a world.
Oh, boy.
Chris Christie, a man living in delusion in the state of New Hampshire for no particular reason. He's not announced anything. He's just attending random town halls in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Gavin Newsom making some interesting moves. I mean, listen, Joe Biden hasn't said what he's going to do. So I think some of these Democrats have to sort of like make some estimations. And I love this for Gavin Newsom. We've talked a lot on this podcast about sort of our mixed feelings about him. Generally, I feel like he has been sort of like the one, you know, who seems like they at least understand like what's going on in the world somewhat and sort of has responded accordingly. I have some quibbles with him about some of the stuff that he's hasn't done in California.
There's the upside of him, which is that he does actually seem to like understand the political scene pretty well.
Yes.
The downside is he's a lazy asshole and a hypocrite. So like most politicians, there's good and bad.
You take the good with the bad, right? Yeah. But he and his wife are touring red states over the weekend and into next week. And also launching like a huge new PAC that like he started with like $1 million or something out of his last campaign or something like that. So
PAC is supposed to boost the profile of Democratic candidates in GOP controlled areas.
Yeah, so. And that's really actually kind of what I wanted to talk about here, more so than even the speculation as to whether he's running again, because I freaking love this.
Yeah.
This is a thing that we have talked about historically on this podcast so much. Like
the 50-state strategy.
The abandonment of the 50-state strategy by the Democrats over the years. This like, you know, he's going to Florida, because of course he is, because he's always picking a fight with Ron DeSantis. But he's also going to Alabama, Arkansas, and Mississippi. National Democrats don't go there. And look, maybe some of the Democrats there aren't super excited to have Gavin Newsom there. I don't know.
Right.
But like, the idea that he would be going there.
Remind people that Democrats are in those places.
That there are Democrats in those places, and that maybe they could use money, and that maybe they could be elected to state houses or to wherever they could be elected to. Like, if they just had a little bit of PAC money from Gavin Newsom. Like,
we have four women in Nebraska holding up business in a state that you definitely don't think of as being a Democratic state.
No.
Because
could they do that in Alabama?
Right, exactly. Because of state-level races. There are Democratic strongholds in all of these states.
Right. So I love this for him. He said, we're going to where Republican leaders ban books, criticize doctors, fire teachers, intimidate librarians, kidnap migrants, target trans kids, stoke racism, condone anti-Semitism. What's that?
It's quite a list.
Oh, I know, right? Force the victims of rape and incest to carry their attacker's baby where they ignore the will of the people.
Yeah.
So, like, this is, I'm obsessed.
The abandonment of the 50-state strategy has had ripple impacts, I think, also inside of blue states, which is why I think it's always so naive of us in blue states to think that a strategy like that has nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
Because look at what happened in New York State in the last cycle. I mean, we had my mother on the podcast to talk about the massive failure of the New York State Democrats in a state that's a wildly Democratic state. There is no reason there should not be more than a couple of Republicans in the, you know, representing them federally. But Democrats don't bother running in what they perceive as conservative districts. They don't invest in those candidacies. They don't invest in those political figures. They don't care about the margins. I mean, when you think about the margins of, like, how did John Fetterman get elected? John Fetterman got elected because he went
to every single county.
Every single county, including places where he had no prayer of winning, to eat away at the margins. Like, when you don't think, the 50-state strategy is an eating away at the margin strategy.
Yeah.
And, like, that applies at the local level and at the federal level. And so if your sort of national strategy is to always focus on only certain races in swing states where you only, where you might have a chance to get one Senate seat back, and you don't care about the sort of longer trajectory of margins in at both the state, federal, local, like, all at every level, then you don't have any plan for the future. You're being an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah.
In any case, so I very pro this. And also, he doesn't do enough work to not be frolicking out in red states, just like trying to get votes for Democrats. So, like, I say go for it.
Right. Exactly. Joe Manchin really committed to waiting to the end of the year. He's gonna talk until the end of the year about whether he's running for president.
And,
like, which is,
if
just,
this man, it would be, you know what would be just the most epic thing that has ever happened? Is if he does not run for president at the end of this year. He has been talking all he does now is get in front of microphones and talk about how he will be talking about whether he's going to run for president in December.
In some instances, unprompted.
Right. Sometimes just announcing
the
it.
The first time he talked about this, everybody was sort of like, wait, did he just maybe mention that he was, like, going to announce whether he was running for president at the end of the year? Because he certainly hadn't been asked, and no one cared, and no one still does, but he's still out there talking about it.
Too true.
He got asked by Chuck Todd, so I guess Chuck Todd cares. He would.
Yeah, he's the kind of person.
Right. But then there was a follow-up question, and he said, as a Democrat or as something else? And he said, well, the party identification is not going to change me. Democrat, Republican. I mean, having a D or R should not change you as a person. I'm going to still fight for the things I do. And then he said, can't I be a moderate centrist with whatever identification or no identification? I would think, I'm not going to be changing as a person. I've been doing this for a long time. So now,
suddenly doesn't understand how party politics works.
Doesn't understand how party politics works.
It's too good for, and he doesn't want to, he wants to just be label free. He probably hates non-binary people, but that did sound a lot like something you might say about your gender.
Yeah.
If you were non-binary.
Yeah.
Well,
I just sort of love this because this next story sort of ties into it a little
bit. He
should give Joe Lieberman a call. And, you know, we'll get into why I'm just sort of, like, generally obsessed with this story. But Joe Lieberman, still alive.
Still alive.
I saw this headline and I was like, well, we have to talk about Joe Lieberman.
Joe Lieberman, really the original Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
I mean, they're two peas in a pod.
They are.
They're part of the same legacy.
Yeah. They really are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe Lieberman.
A man who always deserves a shrug after his name.
I was going to say, we don't have to get into why we hate Joe Lieberman. Because
you should know by now.
You should know by now. And you also, as a person in the year of our Lord 2023, should, whether you even know why, you should feel that hatred for Joe Lieberman in your bones without even... No, like, just
it's
the
like
name.
How trauma can cut pass through generations.
Just the name should make you shudder, even if you don't know why.
Yeah, no, exactly.
He joined a meeting Thursday in support of plans by this centrist group, which I think we've talked about before on the pod.
I think
sure,
we mentioned it once
It's called
before.
No Labels. And they're trying to get presidential ballot access in all 50 states for 2024. They call their plans an insurance policy against the major parties nominating two unacceptable candidates next year. So, No Labels is, first off, they are doing some interesting things because also, like, the Arizona Democratic Party is currently trying to get them off ballot
access
for 2024.
Ballot access.
Specifically not for the presidential race because they're afraid Kyrsten Sinema will run on it.
Of course.
Because right now, she'd have to run as an independent. And so, like,
to get her ballot access as, like, an official centrist.
Right, exactly. So that's why they're pushing back on that. But, like, this idea that there needs to be a group that has involved with Joe Lieberman to get ballot access because, like, maybe Joe Biden might be an unacceptable candidate to run in 2024. Really?
He's not centrist enough, friend.
Guys! What?
Also, I would like to point out, because of course people on the far left and far right are often blamed for being spoilers. In races.
That's really
Ross Perot was a centrist. When we think about who spoilers actually end up being in these races, it's people like Joe fucking Lieberman.
Yeah. Well, and it's also hilarious, too, because I'm sure Joe Lieberman himself has probably spent the last 20 years talking about his hatred of Ralph Nader.
Oh, right? I'm sure.
So, like, listen, you know that we don't accept the idea of spoilers
right.
on this podcast. But if anybody was spoiled,
right.
in anybody... a world where we're giving credence to spoiling,
well,
Joe Lieberman was like the original spoiled person.
If anyone like, is, so like is the idea leaning that into the mythology of spoilers...
Right.
And anyone who's helped create the mythology of spoilers, because right. that was a mythology that he helped contribute to.
Yeah. But I am obsessed with the idea that there be a spoiler and it be from the center of the party. And when we're already running Joe Biden as our candidate. What yes. a world that would be. Really, I mean, what I'm just interested, I'm only interested in that in a selfish way because I'm tired of being blamed for being a
right,
spoiler because
exactly.
I voted for Jill Stein.
That's right.
in California.
Right.
But... You know, it would just be rich to me to have someone further to the right than Joe Biden run and that be what elects Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, like, not that I want him to be the president
spoiler.
Again, but it would just be the idea of that. Like, when you really think about the pieces that would have to be put in place for that to be the case are too stupid to even contemplate. It doesn't make human sense.
It doesn't make human sense. I'm also excited to find out who, if the no labels line really took off, who from various parties might turn out to be in the same political party. I often think about what party Joe Manchin's in and
yeah,
who
sure.
belongs to that party.
Right. Who's the?
I mean, that was something yeah. that I thought about a lot in the gangs of six,
yeah.
8, and 12 days mm-hmm. Or 14 or whatever it was. Every time that we had a gang of six, I was like, well, that's
who's
six people
there?
That are in their own political party. Like,
yeah, totally.
You know,
right, right,
it's
right,
like
right,
the... There's a caucus in the Democratic Party as well that's like a centrist caucus that is a bipartisan centrist caucus that's essentially like the do-nothing party
right, yeah,
where
right.
they just like aren't in favor of
are
doing
they the
anything.
Are they the problem solvers?
He's the problem solvers caucus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the fakest caucus you've ever heard of right. in your life. They've done nothing but cause problems.
I was gonna say, official, zero problem solved.
Zero problems
officially.
Have been solved on their watch. But like, this is essentially an old man version of the Problem Solvers Caucus
yeah,
being
is.
Proposed for the presidential race, where it's just like grumpy people who don't understand how times have changed,
yeah.
thinking all of a sudden that Joseph Robinette Biden... A man right. made in their image and
socialist.
Part a social is like a socialist. Yeah, is a socialist. Like yeah. what a wild Joe Lieberman is not happy with Joe Biden.
I know.
What are we even talking about
beyond.
Here?
Beyond.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But also, stop giving Joe Lieberman microphones.
Get
don't invite
gone.
Him to anything.
Yeah, seriously.
The man should retire into obscurity immediately.
Yeah.
This is a man. This is the man who I think actually was the spoiler in the 2000 presidential race.
100% was. I mean, he was, shouldn't have been, I mean, it was Al Gore's fault that he chose him.
Right, of course. But
yeah.
he shouldn't have been a person in America to choose.
No.
That's, mm-hmm. he could have chosen, if Joe Lieberman hadn't been himself, and we had chosen literally anyone else.
I know.
Including probably like a pony,
yeah.
then we probably.
Definitely a pony.
Well, definitely, people
yeah.
love ponies. But,
yeah.
you know, like it just doesn't. Him being involved in spoiling is really his life's work in a lot
that's
of ways.
Hilarious.
So I guess that's where I've just come full circle. And now I realize
what
exactly what's going on.
What an asshole.
Oh
my God. This Ron DeSantis versus Disney is so delicious.
First of all, did he think he was smart enough to
that's
take on
exactly
Disney?
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Who does this man think he is?
Get
he
out
really
of here.
Thought he did something.
That's
really
ridiculous.
And they were like, sir.
Right.
Let us tell you about yourself.
Right.
You are not taking over Disney. That's not a thing that's going to be happening.
No. a corporation is the only thing more powerful than the U.S. government.
No. As a person.
As a person.
Yeah. Anyway, we've talked about this. He was supposed to be taking over the board of, you know, whatever it was that sort of oversaw Disney, right? They had their own government.
Nothing. Stalinist there. Don't worry about anything. Just the government taking over the media
right.
and major corporations
yeah.
that control our, you know, our media for no reason. Just not. Don't worry about that. We're just
yeah.
nationalizing the media.
Yeah.
But okay.
It was formerly known as the Reedy Creek Improvement District, and that was, you know, the area that like contained Disney. That was essentially like
yeah.
Disney was running its own government within Florida,
yeah.
essentially. So, you know, DeSantis got big mad that they came out against his "Don't Say Gay" bill and whatever
right.
else that they were up to, and so, you know, he took it over. It's now known as the Central Florida Tourism Oversight District, and there's a board that oversees this district. There's five members on it,
right.
and so he appointed 5 members to run it, and they showed up to run it and found that the board didn't have any power anymore because the previous board like made a deal with Disney to give Disney prior review and comment over any changes made to properties in the district. So essentially they like gave up all of their power as a board before the new board came in. And so now all these DeSantis appointees are there and they can't do anything.
This feels like a very colonial fight. Because this is like, we put this into the, back when we were controlling Cuba, the way that we controlled it was that Cuba had their own government. And then we put an amendment in their constitution that said that we had oversight over everything in their constitution and every law that was passed.
Yeah.
And so in essence, we were in control of the government, but they just sort of like frolicked with their own fake government. Right. And then they had a revolution and threw us out for that reason.
Yeah.
This is like, to think that you can just appoint a board and that the corporation of Disney doesn't have a plan where they then are going to strip that board of any power, considering this is all a privately owned area.
Yeah, these people, Ron DeSantis is not a person who's watching Succession.
No. And it's like all you would have to do is watch Succession.
Yeah.
I've only watched 3 episodes of Succession and I already know not to
try this. Ron DeSantis was always going to get gooped in this scenario.
Truly. I actually was shocked when he even thought he was going to take on Disney. Like, I thought Disney coming out against his Don't Say Gay law was like the nail in the coffin of his political career. Because I was just like, well, don't take on Disney. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's lunacy. In Florida, where like your entire state's economy is reliant on Disney, you're going to throw...
Well, more on that in a second.
Well, actually. Right.
Yeah.
But then he did it. And I was like, okay, so he doesn't know what he's doing. Like, that's fine. But then I've been waiting for the moment where we find out how Disney exactly extracted themselves from his authority.
Yeah.
Because I knew in my heart and based on common sense that they always would.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. You mentioned that it felt colonial, and it really does feel colonial because in the deal that they made, they said that the declaration shall be enforceable in perpetuity or if that is deemed unenforceable until 21 years after the death of the last surviving descendants of King Charles the third King of England.
That's amazing.
It's so good. It's so good. But you mentioned the economy. Also happening right now is that the Disney World service workers are going to be voting on whether to accept a union contract that would raise the starting minimum wage to $18 an hour by the end of the year. Now, how does that have anything to do with Ron DeSantis? Ron DeSantis would like the minimum wage to be
$0 a year.
Negative $18 a year. Right, yeah. So, and also unions are bad. But it's interesting because it was Disney that really sort of, like, look, I don't want to give a corporation too much credit here, but, like, they raised the minimum wage to $15 for their employees. And that really sort of, like, because Florida, and specifically that area anyway, is so heavily, you know, based around tourism and also, you know, service industry jobs
and
hospitality. Right, exactly. It really sort of, like, did drive up wages in the state. And then in 2020, they voted, you know, for Donald Trump in a landslide and then also to raise the entire state's minimum wage to $15 an hour.
Right. If there's one thing Floridians have been consistent on, it's having poor character spotting abilities.
Right.
They're not good at identifying the character of the political figures they support. And also, they want the minimum wage to be really fucking high.
Right. Yeah. So it's just going to be interesting to see if that wage there gets raised to 18 because it's going to have a ripple effect because it will. I mean, there's too many. I think that specific union represents like 45,000 people, like all in that area. I mean, there's so many people employed there that like you can't raise the wage there and then expect it to still be whatever it is elsewhere because like people...
This is the kind of thing, though, that, like, if you have a good relationship with Disney, they don't want to pay their workers more than they have to.
No.
Ron DeSantis doesn't want them to pay their workers anything. They could have been in cahoots.
No, right,
and now they're not in cahoots because he's an idiot.
Right.
Who decided to uncahoot himself from the most powerful
corporation in his state. Yeah, he got on the corporation that's running his state.
Yeah. It's like...
And he could have known that.
That's not how politics works, Ron DeSantis. Sorry about it.
That's not. Yeah.
Thanks to your party, largely. Right. I guess both parties to some extent. But I mean, like, thanks to the political system that underpins your entire, you know, sort of like ethos of stupidity.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta know.
Yeah. Anyway, but so delicious.
I love that as a strange bedfellows fight. I love our next story as a strange bedfellows
team up. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a banking bill to address some of the. Put some heat on the executives of the failed banks, the Silicon Valley bank catastrophe people. Yeah. And it's coming from Liz Warren and Josh Hawley.
Of course it is. Right? Mm-hmm. Probably couldn't find another Democrat to help her with
it. That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I like it because it really is sort of a bit of a messaging bill in the sense that, like, you know, it's a way to sort of, like, claw back executives, like, bonuses that they've given themselves because, you know, we hear a lot about executive pay because, you know, the CEOs of these huge banks give themselves, you know, $10 million bonuses or $1 billion bonus or whatever it is.
Right.
Who knows? An amount of money that is hard for us to process and probably hard for you to process, right?
Right.
And some of them are even sort of like cash payouts and things like this.
Right.
And like when, and the FDIC really has no way of clawing any of that money back. And so these people, you know, give themselves millions of dollars and then the banks fail and then they just keep the millions of dollars. And some of them have had warnings that their banks were going to fail for months and years, right?
Right.
I mean, that's what we've learned sort of about the SBV. Or SVB, excuse me. So this is a bill to just sort of like give the FDIC like some power to be able to like get that money back that they have given those executives and sort of use that as, you know, probably what they're giving back to actually, you know, the people who have invested in the bank.
And it's also a little bit concerning if Josh Hawley is the only Republican or Democrat that you can find. I mean, like, I understand wanting a Republican co-sponsor on this legislation, but like, I think one thing, you know, I'm in favor of working with any horrifying figure on specific legislation if they will. I didn't, you know, Bernie Sanders worked with Mike Lee on a resolution about Yemen, like fully in favor of that.
Yeah.
I always think it's funny that like there are these idiosyncrasies on the far right of the party's ideology that don't exist in the center and also don't exist in the Democratic Party center. And so like an idea like this, which is actually really popular with voters and also like not controversial in any way, ends up getting worked on by like only the farthest left and farthest rightmost senators.
Yeah.
And it's like, actually, this would be a win for everyone if we all worked on it. It's like wild to me that the person she had to pair with on that was not Mitt Romney or somebody.
Right.
And is like Josh Hawley.
Yeah, Mitt Romney wants
like
those
a January
6th
insurrectionist.
Money. Yeah, right. Exactly.
And like, again, I don't work with the January 6th insurrectionists if you need to make sure that executive pay is not, you know, like.
I completely agree.
Like, regulate the banks with whoever you need to regulate the banks with. But like, that to me is like just such a massive failure of the centers of both parties.
I mean, I completely agree. And actually, I think I'm not surprised that this is Warren working on this, even more so perhaps than Sanders, who,
oh, yeah,
you know,
is banking is really her.
Banking is her thing. And, you know, she started to do this and tried to do it. And I certainly had notes on how she went about doing it, but during her presidential campaign.
Yes.
And we talked about those at the time, so we don't have to revisit it. But I have always thought, and I think she was getting there with her campaign, that when people sort of like talk about like a thing that like a leftist could do to sort of like bring along right voters, right? Like everybody in the center likes to say these people who are too far on the left like are never going to be able to get the swing voters, right? And the way that you do it is these corruption bills.
Yes.
Because that's where you find, that's where there's the crossover.
Everyone hates corruption and everyone hates being cheated.
Yes.
And 100%. Those are things that are universal qualities of all humans. And if you are the party that's anti being cheated and anti corruption, and not in the fake way where we all say anti corruption, but none of us mean it, but in a way that's like tangible, then you can get voters from any side.
Totally agree. Yeah. So good for both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad when you have to say good for Josh. But Josh Hawley is so such a weird figure because he's also, I mean, he's the one who staked out the $2,000 payment thing. He has this weird populist streak that I know that it's right-wing populism, but there are times that right-wing and left-wing populism overlap.
Right,
and
exactly.
he is often in the center of that, which is so confusing.
Wild times.
In any case, good news. COVID's over.
Friends, we did it.
Officially. It's unofficially still happening and everyone's still getting it. So I would watch out if I were you.
My entire office place had it.
That's right.
In the last
week. I've heard of more people having COVID this week inexplicably than like in any week of this year so far. So I would be careful out there in society if I were you.
Same.
But there was a Republican-led measure to end the national COVID emergency, which we have some questions about how that impacts some of the like the student loan payment. some of the policies that were incredibly popular that were surrounding that.
Well, I think that we're already, like, I think worried about, like, whether people are going to be able to, like, keep their Medicaid, because I think that you didn't have to reapply for that during COVID. They stopped making you do that, and now you're going to have to. And so, like, people can just reapply. But also, you know, there's obviously,
administrative barriers to everything.
Right, of course. So, but I mean, I think that it was some of the emergency measures that they were also using to, like, you know, as their reasoning to be able to, like, cancel some of the student loans. Yeah. Like, that $10 was, I think, like...
$10 in student loans.
Well, I mean, for the people who have hundreds of thousands of dollars, $10,000 feels like $10.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so I'm curious how this all
goes.
But this is Biden, back in February, said that he would veto this, because the Republicans is one of the first bills they put forward. Right. The Republicans, it's like a one-sentence bill. Just all it does. And it's also like... Don't let Paul Gosar have this.
No.
It's his bill.
No, I mean, it's so crazy.
He can only write a bill that is one sentence, probably Paul Gosar.
Well, that's fair.
But, like, I just, you know, Biden had said that, like, he was pushing toward, like, May. That's the other hilarious thing about this. Like, that Biden, at the time, said that he was going to veto it, but not because he disagreed with it, because the federal government was aiming toward May.
How dare we jump the gun in April?
So I was going to say, so they were like quibbling about whether it was going to be April or May.
Outrageous.
Which seems exactly the argument that they would be having amongst themselves, probably.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's nice that we've all given up.
Right. And it's also just sort of like another weird thing where, like, I feel like he's leaving the Democrats high and dry on a lot of these things where he has, like, because that he's just giving mixed messages himself. Because we talked about this with the, you know, the whole DC crime situation where he said that he was going to veto it and then all the Democrats voted against it and then he was like, no, I'll sign it. And the same thing is happening here where he said he was going to veto it and I think like 197 Democrats voted against it. Now, in this instance, they may have done so anyway.
Right.
Although usually they take the president's lead. If he would have said that he was going to sign this, then they probably would not have voted and been... like, on record, being on the wrong side.
Because now they're going to have to defend that vote. And it's like, a lot of them, I would argue, irresponsibly, probably were in support of ending the COVID emergency.
Yeah.
Although, I would also contend that this is going to have ripple impacts on their constituents, where services that were once available no longer will be, and they're going to be blamed for it.
Totally.
So I would be in favor of extending it forever.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Oh, God. But...
here we are.
We did it.
We did it.
Finally, 3 years later.
Next week is Easter.
It's the Easter story.
It's Easter Spectacular. The Brandtrust Live Easter Spectacular.
That's right.
So after what amounts to...
we'll have to figure out what to do.
48
year,
straight hours year, of church or 72 right. straight hours of church yeah. that Brent's going to.
Yeah, because last year I had you explain the Easter story to me. Remember we did that? Because I explained it to you enough. I felt like we could do a quiz.
Yeah, maybe we should try that again.
We got to figure out what to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I feel confident that I could tell a slightly wrong version of the Easter story to anyone who asked. But I feel that in the intervening year, I often lose the timeline a little bit.
Well, I feel like, I mean, I was telling you earlier today that it was Palm Sunday today, and I feel like my timeline sort of like got thrown for a loop a little bit. Right. I've been to Palm Sunday service 40 times.
I still don't know what Palm Sunday is. I've heard about it for years.
I mean, listen, it's a confusing time for everyone. atheists and Christians alike.
That's right.
Easter.
Yeah, Easter.
Yeah.
One of the more confusing holidays. With one of the more fantastical stories.
Ain't that the truth.
So, I'll try to tell it to you next week.
Okay, great.
You can pipe in with the correct facts about what the Easter story is. Or not.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just start a new Easter story. Mine features heavily in aliens and zombies, so I think that's...
aliens make an appearance in yours?
Oh, yeah, there's aliens.
I knew there were zombies. There's always zombies.
Well, there's zombies,
That's pretty straightforward.
Zombie Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I have some alien theories as well. I'll run them by you next week on the podcast.
Yeah, save them.
Yeah, I'm not. Okay. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.